Welcome to episode 506 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard in Ohio.
And I'm Richard Gunther in Las Vegas at CES, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. You know, we have a much bigger booth here this year. You're not here with me, Josh, so you can't hear the folks in Earthquake Audio behind us playing, I think, the same game they were playing last year.
I am quite disappointed to not be there this year. It just didn't work out, but plan to be back next year and forever, basically. So we've got a lot to cover, so let's get into this as quickly as possible, because as usual, CES has a lot to talk about. So we're going to cover some news stories, and then you should be prepared for this question, because we ask each other this question every year of, once we get through all the news, I'm going to ask you, what's the coolest thing you've seen at CES this year? Even if it's not, you know, home theater technology.
I already have the answer, so.
Okay.
All right,
so let's get into the news, and I'm going to let you do this first story, because you got to meet with TiVo and discuss this new product.
I did. So I made an appointment with TiVo, and I think we talked about this in a past episode. I was really excited to get early access to them. I met with them on Sunday before the show even opened. What turned out is that it was a completely different team than you and I are used to dealing with. This was a team that's working on a brand new product from TiVo called the TiVo Stream 4K. This is not a DVR. This is a streaming box, kind of like a dongle, like the original Fire TV 4K, that hangs from an HDMI cable on your television and receives content all through the internet. Now, why would they be coming out with a streaming box? Everybody already has a streaming box. They're a late coming here. Why bother? Well, what they've done is they've included the five or six, at this point anyway, most popular streaming services. So Amazon, the Netflix, Hulu, HBO, the usuals, with linear content from Sling TV. Now, okay, so great. There's Sling TV on here. You can get that on any streaming service. No. This is a TiVo experience. So you don't have to go into a Sling TV app. You don't have to switch between apps even to watch content. Very similarly to how Apple TV curates content, keeps track of what you're watching, and is your kind of entry point if you use the Apple TV app. On Apple TV, it's the entry point to your media consumption. That's what TiVo is doing. The difference is they're blending in linear programming content from Sling TV using TiVo's guide, TiVo's experience. You don't have to deal with the guide from Sling TV. You don't have to go through the discovery process in each of the different apps. You can if you want to, but they're appealing to the crowd that likes TiVo. And you may remember through TiVo OnePass that they were already doing things where they're tracking what you watch on your streaming services and making recommendations based on that. So they'll continue to do that, but they'll blend it with what you're watching on the linear content. They're also going to be augmenting TiVo Plus, which is the relatively so far unexciting over-the-top service that they offer with some streaming content. Very much, I think, like, you know, just a bunch of videos put together and turned into a channel. They're adding more content there, and they're actually going to have a guide for the content now. So it's all going to appear in the same blended TiVo guide. The question is, who does this appeal to? Because we already have plenty of streaming boxes, and does this really fill a need? And I think this is going to be interesting for consumers that have been hesitant to cut the cord because they don't want to have to deal with apps to watch television. You know, when Tim Cook got on stage and said, the future of television is apps, I kind of died a little because I don't believe that. I don't think that makes sense. I don't think that that a lot of consumers necessarily understand it. Younger people do, but the cable crowd that's still hanging on doesn't understand that. And this may get them to switch.
Yeah, this is a really cool device for cord cutters. Sling TV is a pretty good service. It's not the best of these streaming cable TV replacement services. I think that probably goes to YouTube TV at this point. But it's a good one, and it has the features and probably the channels you want at a lower cost than all of the other guys. So that's really cool. The problem with it is the apps, right?
It's a limited selection of apps right now, but they were very clear about the fact that this is a starting point. They're going to put this out. They're going to iterate on it. This is, you know, they're really taking a very different approach from the way that hardware works, because this is all software based. Everything on here they can update with software. They know they have to get Disney Plus. They know they don't have ESPN. There are other services that they're going to have to reach out to. Now, are you going to be able to see the morning show on this service ever? That's unlikely. And why is it unlikely? Well, it turns out that this is all built on Android TV. And is Apple ever really going to play with Android TV? I don't know about that. Yeah, not
probably
so much.
Probably not.
So, you know, what does this cost? Well, here's where they're also really diverging from what TiVo normally does. This is a one-time cost. There are no service fees. It costs, ready? $70. That's it. $70. Certainly cheaper than Apple TV, cheaper than some streamers. It's 4K, it's UHD, it's Dolby everything. So it's competitive with those, except with the content for now. And that's something that they absolutely plan on improving. Now, the other thing is that when they launch, they're going to have a $50 special price point. They haven't said for how long, but I think that'll be appealing to people too.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't think the app situation is as easy as it would be for a regular streaming device because of that integration, because of that really awesome integration.
Because not everybody wants
longer
to give up that control.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. But what's interesting here is that where Apple isn't able to get Netflix to trust them to curate content on their behalf, Netflix is trusting TiVo to do that.
That's true. And that's a really big deal, because Netflix doesn't trust very many people.
Right, right. And Sling has never before allowed their content to be included in someone else's guide. So TiVo's treading new water here. I think it's pretty cool, and we'll certainly see where it goes. I have no doubt we'll be testing one of these and getting some feedback to you as soon as we know more. Now, there's more TiVo news, and that's that there's really no news on the front of the planned software extenders that we were talking about before, the apps that would allow you to watch TiVo and really get the full TiVo experience like you would with a TiVo Mini, but on your Roku, on your Apple TV, and on your Amazon Fire TV. We were so excited when we saw this last year, and they were talking about first half of the year, and we're like, yeah, right. So, but in fact, it didn't come out last year. We may not see the Roku and Apple TV apps this year. When TechHive, I believe, had the interview with them, where the person that we spoke with there ended up saying that the Roku and Apple TV projects right now are dormant while they focus on Android TV and Amazon Fire TV. Now, that's interesting. Why would that be? Well, I just mentioned that the TiVo stream is Android TV. So they could potentially be also trying to somehow let this TiVo stream be an extender? I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like it would fit and that it wouldn't be that hard of a thing to do. But
right. Great. So they're not saying anything about this other than they're not currently working on the Roku Apple and versions, and they are working toward getting the Amazon one out.
Right. Yep. So overall, I think some pretty big news from TiVo. And if they can get the app situation straightened out, I'm with you. I think that it will be a really big deal. And it could be the single device for cord cutters.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So sticking with cord cutters, the one thing that cord cutters do still tend to do a lot is use an antenna to get local network television. And one of the things that we've been watching a little bit behind the scenes for really for over a year now is a new standard called ATSC 3.0. And ATSC is the standard for over-the-air television that's used in the United States. And this new version, the really big deal about it is it offers the ability to send 4K video with HDR, with higher quality audio streams, all of that stuff, over the air, straight to your TV. You don't need a new antenna because antennas, they're just antennas. You you might currently be using an antenna that was on your house in the 70s, right? And it would still work for current over-the-air TV.
Well, you will need, except remember, it's really the UHS receiving portion of that antenna that draws in HDTV.
Right, right. You will need new tuners, though. And so a lot of people are just using the tuners built into their TVs. So this year, we're now starting to see ATSC 3 tuners built into the TVs that are being shown off at CES that will be on sale this year. So you should be able to get the technology to receive it in your home. What about the networks actually providing it? Well, that's starting to come into play also. Sinclair is reporting that they're hoping to hit the top 40 markets within the United States this year with ATSC 3.0. And the top 40 markets in the United States is a really high percentage of the population. So if you live out in the middle of nowhere, maybe this doesn't cover you. But for a lot of other people, it might. Now, there is some FCC ruling around this, like, you know, once a station turns on their ATSC 3 feed, they have to turn off the ATSC. Well, they have to at least keep the current stuff active for at least 5 years. And that starts ticking as soon as they turn on the new one. So in theory, this year in 2020, people could start receiving 4K TV over the air. And that's pretty awesome.
That is awesome. I want to just follow up on something, though. This whole scare of needing to buy potentially a new TV or something that has a tuner in it, isn't that, and maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that was only if you want this 4K capability, that there would be backward compatibility for the standard HDTV signals that you get today. Am I wrong there?
Well, I think what you're actually describing is forward compatibility. You're asking if your current tuner would be able to receive ATSC 3 at all. And I think I see what you're going at with there. Like, if they turn on ATSC, but they're still sending old stuff over it, would it work? I'm not sure I haven't read the spec enough to know if they can use the old technologies as part of ATSC 3. So that I'm not sure of. But if you want all of the good stuff, then you're going to need at least a new set-top box. This is going to be like the digital over-the-air transition of, what was that, 2007, 2008 time frame? All over again. Okay, so that's ATSC 3. Let's move on to our next topic, Plex. This is another one that they weren't really telling everybody. So apparently Plex does have some plans for this year, but they're all kind of sketchy isn't the right word, but it's kind of up in the air. They're waiting for some more customer feedback. It sounds like it's all still very much in the planning stages. But Plex wants to continue to be the absolute center of your media center, your video view, well, really more than just video, but all of your media consumption. And that obviously includes
lots. Plex wants to be your media center.
Indeed. Well, and they kind of are, right? But to be your media center, that means that it really needs to cover your streaming video, because we're using all sorts of streaming video apps. So they're planning to try and integrate similar to how, like, you can purchase a Showtime or an HBO subscription through Amazon, to be able to do that same sort of thing through Plex, and then have Plex be able to search into that content, so that if you open up Plex and search for Westworld, it'll list Westworld from HBO and let you watch it right inside of Plex. That would be a really beneficial, very, very time-saving sort of thing. I mean, it's really similar to what we talked about with TiVo there.
Right.
Right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But they're super unlikely to get Netflix and Amazon Prime Video and stuff like that. So for that, what they're hoping to be able to do is still be able to search through that content, but it would require what they're calling deep linking. So it would find what you're looking for and then, I guess, open it in another app. Like, this is the part that I think gets really weird with Plex, because Plex runs on so many different things. How is Plex going to be able to transport you to a different thing if you're running Plex on your TiVo versus Plex in your web browser?
Right, and more importantly, get back.
Yes. Yeah, well, for Plex, that's definitely more important, right?
Right. Right, yeah. I don't get this. This is not exciting to me at all. They didn't even talk with me about this, but that could be because we started talking about the idea of Plex being the center of your media, and I just kind of went off on, I just don't understand how that makes sense. Plex doesn't have an experience that's easy enough for everybody in the household to understand and use. It still has a largely techie following and user base, and I just don't see them being the home base. And as a content provider, why would that app be grant, like, input zero for starting your TV viewing experience? There are already people that are doing that and have experience doing that well, and, you know, TiVo bringing what they're doing in their boxes today over to their new streaming stuff. This just doesn't make sense to me at all. I'm not convinced this is going to be enormously successful. It's not something I would ever use.
Okay. We have a lot of big Plex fans that listen to the show.
I know. I get
that. I have to think that a lot of them would.
Yeah, maybe. 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 I think the Plex experience would have to improve dramatically. You know, our colleague Chris is here with me helping out while we're at CES. And, you know, he was one of the people who was saying, like, yeah, no, Plex is too complicated. My family can't use that as their starting point for watching TV. It would never fly.
All right, well, why don't we move on from Plex? You want to talk about some lasers?
Yeah, well, you know, I love these Hisense laser TVs. I know you're not excited about them, but next year, when you see these, I think you're going to feel differently about them, because what they've been doing over years is adding lasers. More lasers is better, right? More lasers means more light. And now they've added red, blue, and discrete green lasers to accomplish creating this incredibly rich picture that was kind of lacking when they were only using one laser, or even on their high-end model, two lasers. So this year they're showing off a 75-inch and a 100-inch version of their short-throw laser projector with the screen that comes with it. They're not talking about timing on this yet, but it is a three-laser system, and it's pretty cool. I think the picture is phenomenal compared to what we saw before. And as you know, I liked the pictures that they were generating with their one and two laser devices. I thought that in some use cases, as far as short throw projectors go, they're doing something better than anyone else has been. So excited to see that. They're also revving their previous models of those single and double lasers. So we'll see them sometime this year in April, the new versions of the single and double laser short throw projectors.
And are those available in the United States?
They absolutely are. They absolutely are. And if I remember correctly, I think the 75-inch was $3,000 or something like that. I mean, it's obviously going to be more than what you would pay for an equivalent television. But, you know, when you start looking at projectors, and if you don't have the space for it, but this is something that could work in your space, then that price may start seeming a little bit more aligned with what it would cost to solve your problem.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about on the video spectrum before we leave, this is actually a combination of video and audio, so we'll say that this will kind of blend us into the next segment. And that's IMAX Enhanced. IMAX is showing off a new technology that they've been working on to make available to studios so that IMAX content that currently gets shown usually only in an IMAX theater, and then, you know, let's say you went to go see Spider-Man in IMAX, and all or part of the movie is filmed in IMAX, that IMAX stuff kind of just goes away and never gets seen again, unless maybe they put it as an extra on the disc, but even then it's usually a pan and scan or something like that. They're not actually using the IMAX format. So what they're doing is they're coming out with something called IMAX Enhanced that is going to first add digital noise reduction to all of the legacy content and make it so that it's going to look beautiful on home theaters. Then they're doing sound mapping so that the object-oriented sound that is already in use in IMAX will map to your object-oriented sound system, your 360, so over DTSX. And all of this is going to be supported by some very specific televisions from Sony, TCL, and some other manufacturers later this year, and by new AV receivers. These are not cheap AV receivers. These are from Sony, from Sound Design, from Macintosh. These are high-end AV receivers right now that can support it. But this is cool technology to bring otherwise legacy and kind of, you know, vaulted content from IMAX that you've enjoyed in the theater to your home theater.
Cool. That sounds out of my price range, but it does sound pretty awesome. So let's move on, because that does nicely lead us into the audio category. TCL is following the trend from Amazon Fire TV to start including Amazon Fire TV essentially inside of a soundbar. So you don't need a Fire TV stick and a soundbar. Your soundbar is both of them. And this new product from TCL is called the TCL Alto 8 Plus Fire TV Edition. It's supposed to be on Amazon right now. I checked Amazon. It's not there.
It's not. It would be available for pre-order if it were, but it's not there yet. This is the successor to the Alto 7 Plus, the big difference being that it now includes Fire TV. And so that also means that it comes with a Fire TV remote to control the sound and the Fire TV experience. And it's a customized kind of an OEM'd remote that includes some of the popular services with their own buttons on the remote. I was really impressed with this as an all-in-one solution for someone that wants to create a home theater kind of on the cheap, if you will, soundbar and streaming device. Oh, by the way, and because it's a Fire TV device with a remote, it has their assistant on board, and you can use that as well. And you can use it paired, I believe, with the studio speakers if you wanted to do that. So it's a cool solution. I think that they're doing something interesting. And really, Amazon was showing the integration of Amazon services like Fire TV and its assistant in a whole bunch of different devices, including a Lamborghini, a Cadillac. And one of the things that they were showing in vehicles is that for entertainment centers, the entertainment systems were going to include Fire TV in the vehicles, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a little crazy.
Well, but for it's not like backseat audio.
Well, Lamborghini doesn't have a backseat.
So, yeah, that was in the Cadillac.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, the soundbar with a streamer built in makes total sense as maybe it's not for your home theater, but it's a really good solution for the bedroom or a guest room or some secondary place. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, great solutions here. All right. We also caught up with a company that we met last year, Clear Audio, C-L-E-E-R. They make, well, up until this year, they were a headphone manufacturer. They've expanded that this year. Actually, no, they've had some smart speakers before too. But just a quick hit on some of these new headphones, because I think they all are pretty impressive for specific reasons. So the first set is called the Goal. These are they look like normal true, as we've been calling lately, truly wireless earbuds where there's no cable connecting them, sort of like AirPods. And these ones, they're really more designed for use when you're exercising, when you're running, when you're at the gym, and a lot of people with a lot of these truly wireless earbuds have a problem of the earbuds falling out while
right.
they're doing these exercises.
Right, exactly.
So these have, you know, some of those, they're calling them ergonomic wings to kind of, you know, hold them in your ear better. So that's important for, you know, so they don't fall out and have you stomp on them.
Yeah, exactly.
These things aren't cheap.
They're calling them ergonomic wings, if I understand right, because they're designed with a substance that makes them a whole lot more comfortable than the normal plastic wings that you often see on these types of earbuds. I've tried earbuds like that, and I found them unbearable after a period of time. So I think this is a pretty clever way of addressing that, if in fact they're as comfortable as they say. Now, you know, at a place like this where thousands of people are looking at your product, you're not going to try these things on necessarily. So I don't know. But
Right. So the other thing that I liked about them is that unlike basically all of the other truly wireless earbuds, they don't stick in your ear by jamming one of those silicon things right into your ear canal. So that means that you can actually hear things other than what's coming through your headphones. And
right.
Maybe when you're at the gym, you don't want to hear anybody else. But if you want to wear these while you're jogging around your neighborhood or riding your bike, you absolutely need to be able to hear what's going on around you for your own safety.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like out of this ear on my left where I have my one AirPod, I can clearly hear the game behind me being played with Earthquake Audio because it's just a regular old AirPod. But on my right where I have my actual sound dampening rubberized headset, I think it's a clever way. And it's funny, the design for this, for the part that actually goes in the ear, looks strikingly similar to what Apple did with their earpiece.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, it's not like the human ear is changing shapes over the years. So
true.
Yeah. So, and these are going to be launching this spring for $129, which is also a super competitive price.
Yep.
Yep, next up, they've got a new over-the-ear active noise-canceling headphone. They're called the Endure ANC. This is kind of a combination of two of their lines from before. They've had the Endure 100, and they had the Flow, which was their active noise-canceling headphones. Now they've got this one where it is a true active noise-canceling headphone that, with ANC turned on, will get 60 hours of battery life.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
That is twice. Yeah, it's twice what a lot of their competitors get.
Yeah, I believe that when I see it, but that's quite a claim.
Yeah, yeah. And these are all using USB-C, so you can do quick charging with them. And, you know, if your headphones die right before you're getting on a plane, you can get 2 hours of battery life from a 5-minute quick charge. So that's a really nice feature to have. And again, the price is reasonable. These are $200 headphones launching in April.
Yep, very nice. And I like the feel of these. These are incredibly light. I had a chance to take a look at these and, you know, weigh them. And the ear pads are nice and soft, so it's a good quality product.
And when you hear 60 hours of battery life, you don't think light because you figure they've got to have ginormous batteries in there.
Right, exactly.
So the last headphone that they've got coming out this year is a really unique one. You also got to try this one on. It's called the Arc, and they're calling this an open-ear headphone. So it doesn't have anything that goes in or over your ear. The device kind of sits in front of your ears. Like, if you've got sideburns, these will cover up your sideburns and then direct audio directly into your ears. What did you think of these when you put them on?
Yeah, I sent you a picture of me wearing these, which you wisely excluded from your article about these. It's an interesting sound because obviously it's not direct sound. Now, there's a pair of glasses from Bose that does a similar sort of thing where the sound is directed from right above your ear into your ear canal. And frankly, I thought what Bose was doing is better, but this is an interesting solution. I worry a little bit about just how good this is for you, because I feel like those little speakers need to be pretty loud for that sound to go in there, but at the same time you're not hearing it behind you, so I don't know. This is kind of all magic to me. They sound good, but they wouldn't be good enough that this is what I would want to wear all the time.
Yeah, they definitely have some unique use cases. You know, they've got that open ear situation so that you can hear what's going on around you if that's important. And no headphone is going to sound its absolute best if you can hear things that are around you. But like you said, they're super light.
You're hearing them around you in full.
Right.
Like, that's the problem. It's not like the other that lets a little sound in. You're hearing them in full. So the audio for you to understand it has to be pretty loud. Like, we were cranking it up to like 8 or 9 out of 10 or 100% or whatever for me to be able to hear something that they were playing on the phone that it was connected to.
Of course, you were also in a really loud convention center.
That's true. That's a good point.
So, super light, like you said, 8 hours of battery life on these things, and they will also be available for $129. Now, they've also got a rather unique new sound. It's not a sound bar. It's kind of a gigantic smart speaker. And the idea here is to have a smart speaker for rooms where maybe your TV, maybe there isn't a TV at all, or where you don't want the TV to be the focus, but you still want to have great audio. And so I'm not even going to try and describe the shape of this. You're just going to have to go and look at our post out on the digitalmediazone.com to see
it. It's an art piece.
It is. It looks nice. Really nice. But that giant design makes room for 8 speakers to be inside of this thing, and plus 2 more rear-firing subwoofers. And then they've got some advanced audio software to allow you to listen in 3 different modes. There's what they call wide stereo mode, which is more of your traditional listening mode. Then they've got a room filling mode, which is supposed to make it sound like the music is just everywhere. And the idea there is, like, if you're having a party and there's people all over the room, then you want everybody to be able to hear the music. And then the third mode is called 3D immersive mode. And the idea there is, like, you're sitting on the couch and you just want to be enveloped in sound in that one location in the room. So all of those sound really useful, really cool. You have to imagine it's going to sound really good, at least it better, because it's going to cost $600 when it launches in August.
Yeah, and this is something that they could not demonstrate on the show floor where I saw it at Unveiled, because at these smaller preview venues for the press, they're not allowed to turn on loud audio like, you know, what's around on the floor here. So I'm hoping that I get a chance to actually check this out on the show floor and give you an idea of what I thought about the sound. I'm assuming they'll probably have this in some sort of sound booth.
Yeah. Well, if they're in the same place where they were last year, they're only about 200 yards away from where you are now.
Well, perfect. I'll turn around and look when we're done.
All right. So one more story to get into from the gaming perspective. And this might not initially sound like a gaming story, but it is. And that is some news from LG and their new OLED TVs. I can't believe we're this far into the show and this is the first time we're talking about OLED TVs. But their new OLED TVs, of course they're stunning. Of course they're going to be beautiful. They're going to have a great user interface because they're still using WebOS. But if you're a gamer, I think you're really going to want to look into these if you're planning to buy a new high-end TV for your house, because this year, well, really four of their new OLEDs, but one of them is the super high-end model, the ZX, which is going to be crazy expensive. But the other three, the GX, the CX, and the BX models, are all going to support AMD FreeSync and NVIDIA G-Sync technology, and that is the variable refresh rate stuff, and it'll automatically switch into this for you. Variable refresh rate that prevents screen tearing when your gaming console or your gaming PC is not delivering the video to the TV at the TV's native screen, the display ratio, the display rate, you know. So if your TV is a 60 frames per second TV and you've got some awesome computer that's putting out 80 frames per second, you will get screen tearing, and it is not a good thing. So these are 120 hertz TVs and support both of those standards. So this is going to be really awesome, and I kind of want to get one now.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm really excited to see manufacturers incorporating this stuff into, like, regular TVs.
Yeah. And for a long time, it didn't feel like it mattered that much because most people aren't using TVs with a gaming PC. And most people only had NVIDIA and G-Sync and FreeSync capabilities from a computer. But last year, the Xbox One started supporting FreeSync. So this is all coming, and I fully expect the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5 to support both of these features also.
Cool. Very cool.
So that's it for our main news. You've gotten plenty of time to think. Not really, because you've been podcasting the whole time. But what is the coolest thing that you've seen at CES this year?
So is this across all categories entirely?
All categories.
Is this specific to what we... Okay. So, yeah, I'm still going to keep it at this. And I'm really impressed by the TiVo stream. I think TiVo has come up with a really good way of coming out with a product that's relevant, that appeals to their existing customer base, and may be able to draw some of that base into a cut-cord media home where they still enjoy all the benefits and everything that they love of TiVo. And, you know, for those of you that have said that, okay, well, the TiVo apps are slow because the boxes, forget all that. This is, you know, this is hardware with memory in it. We're not dealing with hard disks. This is an Android box. It's performant. It's crazy fast. I saw a lot of it on display live. And I'm thinking that this is going to be a really cool device for consumers. Now, you know, according to the conversation that I'm having on Twitter today with Dave Zatz and some other enthusiasts, who knows if that's going to be the case, but I'm fairly convinced that this is not designed to appeal for example, the audience that listens to this show. If you're already someone who has a streaming box and you use like 10 or 15 different apps and you have a bunch of different subscriptions, this is not for you. But if you're someone who is just a little bit hesitant or is kind of fed up with the TV situation as it is, and you'd rather have something that is a little bit easier to manage, and you're more on the average household that has like 2 point something subscription services, not seven, then this may actually appeal to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't disagree.
Okay. How about you? I mean, you've kind of been looking at it from the perspective of all the news that's been coming out. What really caught your attention more than anything else?
You know,
I had to know I was going to ask you back.
But I'm not there. So I didn't really prepare for this. The TiVo thing is interesting. I'm personally really interested in those clear goal headphones, because this year is the year I'd like to make the switch to truly wireless earbuds. I'm excited about those LG OLEDs, and I love the fact that we're what, 3 years into OLED now, or is it 4 years
yeah.
into OLED? So prices for OLED finally starting to come down. I don't really care about all the 8K TVs for all of the reasons that we talked about last year at CES. So those aren't on my list, but I think those are the big ones. Like the things that I normally end up getting excited about or want to talk about as my favorite device are like the weird things that you see from companies you've never heard of. And not being there, I don't get to see any of those things. So
right. Right,
because they don't
no,
always
that's
get
true.
Reported on.
That's true. No, that's a really good point. You know, it's been a weird year. This is probably the second year in a row, if not the third year, where there wasn't something here that was just mind blowing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, last year, my favorite product out of last year's CES was a really cool product. It was the Ring. The Ring Transformer that allowed you to hook your existing in-ground lighting system into the Ring ecosystem, your Ring security lighting. And I thought that was an ingenious way of applying their technology to a retrofit solution for things that people already have. And in fact, today I just published about the latest Ring things, which are, again, kind of generational, not earth-shattering, but ways of incorporate, you know, like bulbs that let you incorporate existing sockets around your home into your Ring security ecosystem and stuff like that. And of the products that we've seen in the smart home space and in the TV space, almost all of it has been refinements. Now, the good news is that it's important refinements, it's good refinements, and that most of those refinements are improvements in the overall customer experience with the product. And so that tells me that what companies are really focusing on now is making sure that they get their products to a point where it's just dead simple or something that consumers really enjoy using, as opposed to, here, let's just get this technology out there as fast as we can.
Right. You know, I feel like for the last 2 or 3 years, we've been saying, well, this year's CES, it feels a lot more evolutionary than revolutionary. And,
yep.
And
it's, that's because there's nothing more to invent. That's why.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure. I think I think we're
due. Just kidding.
I know. But I do think we're due soon over the next couple of years for two primary reasons. One is the price of OLED and the use of it in like folding and rollable displays. Like right now, right. We're seeing foldable tablets and stuff like that. And none of that seems to make any sense right now. But I think someone's going to figure it out. And then the other big part, and maybe these two combine in some way, is I don't think we fully know what to expect from 5G and what 5G is really going to enable for humanity and technology in general. So,
yep.
I mean, when you can get speeds that fast wirelessly, that's going to open up some new doors.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. You know, you mentioned the folding thing. This isn't necessarily relevant to our focus on the show anymore, but it is kind of interesting to just mention that I went into the Lenovo area and got to see the new X1 foldable, whatever they call it. I guess it's a tablet.
Right.
And it's cool, but, you know, my first reaction was I've bought two first generation Lenovo Windows tablets before. I'll never do it again because I got burnt big time on both of them in terms of support and reliability and stuff like that. And there's no way that I would recommend anyone buy this first generation folding tablet from Lenovo. I think we need to see, you know, I think we need to see them refine the technology and get through the kinks and get past the don't be an early adopter on this is what I'm saying. And that probably won't be too hard of a of a skip for many people because it's going to cost upwards of like $2,500.
Right. And be super thick and it's a really weird device.
It is. It's a thick device. It's only 2 pounds, but it is a thick device. It's easily as thick as, say, the Surface Book with that weird curvy hinge. And it kind of has the same sort of thing going on because, of course, there needs to be space for that screen to fold into without creasing.
Right. Yep. All right, well, we're not going to do what's going on in our entertainment centers so that we can let Richard get back to the show floor and find more good stuff for us. We also are holding off on our show feedback for next week. We've got some really good listener feedback, but we're going to save it for next week. Anything else from CES you want to talk about before we get out of here?
No, I still have a lot to see. Haven't been in the Google booth yet. I just, like, to record this was my first step into South Hall. So I am looking forward to kind of finishing this out this afternoon and tomorrow. And I'm already exhausted as usual. So I don't know how long I'm going to make it tomorrow. It's been fun. It's been really enjoyable. I'm very grateful to our friend Chris for coming out and helping me with everything here. He's been really a big help, certainly with all the equipment and getting stuff set up and everything. So, it's been a good year.
Good. Awesome. Well, if you want to get a hold of us or chat with Richard while he's on the show floor checking things out, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We've also got an Instagram feed. Richard's been throwing tons of product pictures up on Instagram. We're also on Facebook. Like, all of our contact information is right here on thedigitalmediazone.com in the show notes. Richard, you've also got another podcast, Home On, that I'm really hoping that all of the Home On listeners have already listened to it because of the topic.
Yeah. So, carrying on our tradition of having someone from CNET join us right before CES each year, we had CNET's Molly Price on. She's from their smart home section of CNET. And she and I kind of talked through some of last year's hits and misses and talked about things that we were expecting or looking forward to at this year's CES. So I think it was a fun discussion. And you know, even if you've already gone through the CES news for this year and you've kind of had enough of that, it's always fun to look back at the previous year and kind of give it a scorecard. What actually happened and what didn't? And, oh, by the way, one of the things that didn't yet, third year in a row, we're seeing those LG OLED rollable TVs one more time.
All right. Well, you can also catch this show live normally. We actually, we didn't advertise that the show would be live, although it was, because we just, you never know what you're going to get when you're recording from CES. So, but normally, we record the show Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, and there's live video and audio and of course, a chat room for you to participate and be a part of the show. So come back next week. Check us out then, because that's going to do it for episode 506. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
See ya.